Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. Now, we are getting into more of a consistent groove here. I've been putting out a new podcast every single week since right before WrestleMania. I wanted to get this podcast off the ground in time for WrestleMania. Barely made it. But with that, I'm already starting to debate what I should call the podcast. Right now, it's just been Jeff's WWE Fancast. That doesn't really roll off the tongue very well. So I am debating coming up with a new title. I have a couple ideas in the works, but it shouldn't change anything. If you've happened to subscribe to this feed, it will stay the same. You just might see the branding and the title change. Because who knows? If this ends up becoming a thing, I want it to be set up for success. And I'm enjoying doing it. I don't know if anybody's listening to it, but if you are, love to hear from you. You can reach out to me either through my website, jeffreydesiato.com, or you can email me at jeffdesiato@yahoo.com. And Jeff is spelled G-E-O-F-F. So you should see it in the podcast feed there. But anyway, wanted to recap our King of the Ring qualifying match tournaments on SmackDown and Raw this week. Let's dive in. I don't want to waste any more time. We kicked off SmackDown with Naomi versus Nia Jax. That was an announced match. There are a couple shifts. As you saw, we had over the weekend at the live shows, there were matches that were originally part of the tournament that were then moved to live matches, which there was some backlash about that. Specifically for me, I want to see LA Knight on TV every week. He did post something where he said, you know, it's okay. Live matches are great. We enjoy doing live matches, and it gives something for the live audience there. The non-televised matches mean something. It kind of promotes the live events. They don't need any problems promoting the live events. Everyone has been sold out for, I don't know, the last month or two or three. They're doing a good job with that. But this is also something kind of cool probably for the live audience to know that this match actually has stakes in the canon, as it were. A lot of times the live events that aren't televised are considered non-canon. You have babyfaces and heels doing things they wouldn't normally do on television, playing up to the crowd and things like that. What I've heard is that those non-televised live events are really fun because you see the wrestlers just enjoying the process, enjoying the fans, enjoying without having to worry about storyline and stuff like that. So at some point, I'd like to get to one of these. So far, I've been to two Monday Night Raws and WrestleMania 40, and had a blast at all of them. That was a tangent. Let's dive in. Started the show with a recap video from Backlash, as they always do. And I would say that sometimes when these matches get cut short or people get taken off television, I kind of, for those of us that faithfully watch, I get why they do it. But those of us who watch every week, I just skip through all these recaps. Like, I feel like it's 10 minutes of the show that is just recapping the previous show, especially at the beginning. And I would like to see that time better used, maybe. But I can't forget about the people who may be tuning in periodically and need to stay on board with the stories. I know that WrestleMania, I've gone back and I've been watching through all the WrestleManias, and most of the time, they give you like a build-up to the storyline so you can feel like you know what's going on. So that's good, and I understand now why they do that, but man, does it feel frustrating, especially on a SmackDown when it's only 2 hours and there's a lot of story they're trying to tell. It feels like it gets they miss out on some opportunities because they spend 3 minutes on a package that really probably could be a minute, you know. But they love showing off their production team, so I can't fault them for that. So anyway, we had this match. Naomi taking the loss. I don't know. I feel like she's come back and she's really just been what she was before she left, which is just like a mid-card person who is there. Maybe she's been around for a while, so maybe this is the point of her career. She doesn't mind putting people over, but Nia Jax definitely has the better storyline. We have Nia Jax winning, and that sets up a match with Jade Cargill and Nia Jax, which is going to be awesome. And one of the things that I want to talk about as we get into like the King of the Ring as a whole, previewing that and everything, is that I mentioned it in the last podcast, but the matches we're getting in this tournament are matches that you would normally build to. For instance, Jade Cargill, Nia Jax, they have history with the Royal Rumble, and I'm sure they'll tie that in as they promote the match. But it's just incredible. I saw one article on Bleacher Report saying that AEW and WWE have ushered in the golden area, the golden era of wrestling tournaments. And I would have to agree. It makes everything count. As Sam Roberts has on his rules, one of his rules for not Sam Wrestling is everything counts. And that's one thing that I think was missing from wrestling for so many years, was that you weren't rewarding people's viewership. You were just throwing matches out there that had no, you would build up a story, like someone would bump into somebody backstage and be like, you know what, we're going to have a match. And they'd be like, all right, get out there. And they'd have a match, and then it would be dropped a week later. Now, they still do that, where people have beef backstage and it becomes a match, but it feels like they're using the shows better. They're using the time on TV better to build to the premium live events, to keep stories going. And that is helping the product. As you can see, it's at the peak it's been in the last 20 years. So anyway, I feel like a lot of my podcast is more going to be about commenting on the product as opposed to just doing review. I will review the PLEs, and I will mention what happens on the SmackDown and Raws for the time being, but I'm a big picture guy, and I think I'm going to focus on the things that stand out to me, and specifically the things that I loved, and highlighting those overarching things that make us love wrestling. So Nia Jax won against Naomi. We had Baron Corbin versus Carmelo Hayes. Baron Corbin, I was hoping to see him. He kind of came back to nothing, and they did play it up where Carmelo was teasing him about how he was a first-round draft pick and Corbin was drafted off television. Just on Twitter, they posted that he got drafted. Corbin, I want to see him get a run. I know he's done a lot of great reinventing work in NXT, not something I really tracked because I don't watch NXT regularly, but I just know that there's a groundswell of support for him now. People are starting to appreciate the work that he's done and how he's basically been a team player and done whatever he's been asked to do. And I'd like to see him get a face run. I don't understand why they didn't keep the Wolf Dogs a team. They could have really built that. Maybe they will build it at some point where they'll reunite. Bron Breakker seems a little lost right now, and they're using that as storyline, which I'll get to. They talked about it on Raw, but I'll get to that. Well, I might forget to get to it, so I'll talk about it now, where they, you know, have him kind of at odds with Adam Pearce and complaining about not being in the King of the Ring tournament. Just really trying to establish him as a force to be reckoned with, which is good. But I would have loved to see, I think Corbin and Bron Breakker's pairing brought a lot of personality out of Bron Breakker, and I think it's a misstep to not have them come onto the roster as a tag team and build up the rapport with the main roster audience, which isn't always the same as the NXT audience. And it would help, I think, establish both characters. You could even then have a feud between the two of them when they split, etc. So we'll see where they go. Hopefully they do have plans for both of these guys. Sometimes these NXT call-ups seem to happen and there's not really a plan in place, which is unfortunate. But Carmelo Hayes beat Corbin. It was a good match, and Corbin looked strong in it. And Hayes, I feel like he's a great heel. He's got that smile and that like arrogance. And he stole a win, you know, with the surprise roll-up. So they protected Corbin a little bit there. They made him look strong. But I would have liked to have seen Corbin have a match on the main roster now that he's back, where he got a win. But we'll see what happens there. Moving on, Jade Cargill. I did spoil this, but you're probably not listening to this obscure podcast if you didn't watch this show, unless you're a family member or a friend who's just trying to support me, which is nice. Jade Cargill versus Piper Niven. This was fun. You always have the battle of the strong women. Someone of Piper Niven's stature and having a muscular wrestler like Jade Cargill, there's always the whole thing is like, can she body slam her? And can she do all her normal impressive moves against someone of Piper Niven's size? And Cargill won. It was a good match. Was not surprised by the outcome, obviously. And then you have Chelsea Green, who's just a treasure in terms of being that annoying heel character and getting involved. I get Sherry Martel vibes from Chelsea Green, which is a huge compliment. Sherry Martel was one of those people where no matter who she was paired up with, she gave them instant heat. Shawn Michaels, they paired her with Shawn Michaels when he went single. just to give him that heat, like that she has that, and she has that annoying, you know, the Karen thing wasn't a term back then with Sherri Martel, but she was fierce. But the fact that Sherri Martel was a female wrestler helped, because she understood the storytelling that was required. She wasn't just a valet. She could get physical. She understood how to put over the wrestlers, how to get heat on her wrestler and shine on the babyface. And Chelsea Green has that. And I think she's been a great asset to the company. And I would like to see what she continues to do as she goes forward. But anyway, we had Bianca Belair, her match versus Candice LeRae. It was quick and painless, I guess, most of the time. They had the interaction with Jade Cargill leaving as Bianca Belair was coming in, a dominant tag team force. But then we have Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill advancing, and they're teasing that they might end up having a match together. I don't think they will at this point. I think Tiffany Stratton is going to find a way to beat Bianca Belair in the tournament later on. We'll get there. But Belair won with not much fanfare. Angelo Dawkins ended up replacing Bobby Lashley. He has an undisclosed injury where he's not medically cleared. We don't know if that's storyline driven or if that's legit. From what I saw online, it seems to be a legit injury. And the injury bug seems to keep rearing its ugly head. But it's okay. I think Angelo Dawkins is an unsung hero. I think Montez Ford gets all of the accolades because he's so physically gifted. And so, you know, he's like a rabbit with how he bounces around the ring. But Angelo Dawkins, I actually feel like there's a lot of character stuff that could be done with him. And I'd be really interested to see them actually figure out what they want to do with the Street Profits, because I feel like it's gotten stale. They paired him with Bobby Lashley. It hasn't really worked, in my opinion. They wanted them to be heels, and the audience wouldn't accept Bobby Lashley as a heel, so then they turn the babyface, and they have the Final Testament feud at WrestleMania and stuff. They're being positioned as a top act, but they're not really telling any stories with them. And I think one of the reasons why is because Bobby Lashley isn't necessarily a great promo, and you have him as kind of like the talking piece. And they had B-Fab added, and she's a little bit better on the mic, but even that whole thing with her getting involved, it was just like stop start. Like, was she, you know, she had a vignette where she was talking to Bobby Lashley, and then she never joined for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden she was there, and it just feels like they're non-committal with the Pride. And I would like to see them figure something out. What I would like to see is Montez Ford turn, make him a heel, and have Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford feud. I don't know. I just feel like Angelo Dawkins does not get enough credit. Now, there is more of a groundswell now where people are like, hey, don't forget, don't sleep on Angelo Dawkins. So I feel like that's entering the mainstream a little bit. But obviously, he was going to lose this match. But it would be interesting. I wonder if they took Bobby Lashley out because they wanted Tama Tonga to go over and they wanted to protect Bobby Lashley. That's a possibility. I mean, we have the bloodline there, so there's always the cheating that could go on to protect Bobby Lashley, but maybe they figured, okay, well, Angelo Dawkins will eat the loss, Tama Tonga will advance, and that's what happened. Not without interference from the bloodline, as normal. Tongaloa was there, Solo Sikoa was there, and you know, it was a typical bloodline thing. AJ Styles versus Randy Orton, this was a match that, you know, there is some history there, especially with the Fatal 4-Way from Royal Rumble. And then AJ Styles eats the loss to Randy Orton again after losing to Cody Rhodes and losing to LA Knight at WrestleMania. He did get back his win to set him up for the challenger against Cody Rhodes, but Randy Orton is so over right now that I can't see him taking a loss that's not on a PLE. The audience just loves him. They love his comeback. They love everything. He looks like he is enjoying the heck out of being a wrestler. He was recently quoted in an interview as saying that he originally thought that he would be done. Now he wants to wrestle for another 6 years into his 50s because he feels so good. He feels better now than he did when he was in his 30s, and he was wrestling through pain and back injury and everything. So, I mean, he looks shredded. He is entertaining. He's much better as a promo now. He's the complete package now, whereas I feel like he was kind of just, you know, being pushed by the company, and he had the traits, so he was being pushed. And now I feel like he's put it all together and he's in the twilight of his career, but he's doing some of his best work because he's wrestling in a way that can preserve him, but also entertain and do all the vintage Randy Orton, as Michael Cole says. So there was a great, great interaction. Like, let's talk a little bit about the Bloodline, because the drama of the Bloodline, I feel like it's the most interesting the Bloodline's been in some time. And a lot of people had their doubts about Solo Sikoa, you know, stepping in as like the leader, but I think they're telling the story the right way. What I mean is, he's not being like Roman Reigns. He's being like Solo Sikoa, trying to be Roman Reigns. And that's what they're leaning into. And I think it's really important. But I loved, like, he was actually really good on his promo talking to, what's his name? Paul Heyman. Sorry. He was really good. Like, I was surprised at how convincing he was talking about how it was Paul Heyman's decision to keep Roman Reigns out of the draft that made them fall to the third round, which was taking money from Solo Sikoa's family, taking food out of the mouths of Solo Sikoa's family. And what has the Bloodline all been about? It's about Roman Reigns being at the top of the industry to provide for his family. He's the head of the table, meaning he is the one providing the meals. He's providing the lavish love lifestyle. He's providing for his family, not just his immediate family, but his greater family as a whole. The Maivia Anoa'i Bloodline. And now Solo Sikoa, in the absence of the tribal chief, is acting by orders of the tribal chief. And that was a little bit of information that we got this week, which was good. We don't know if it's true, but saying that Paul Heyman hasn't talked to Roman Reigns, but Solo Sikoa has. We don't know if he actually has or if he's just usurping him as the tribal chief, but that was really interesting to see that. And then he brings him in for the I love you hug, but you know that there's a lot there. There's so much. It's so loaded with that moment there. And you have Tama and Tonga. That's going to be so hard to say. Tongaloa and Tama Tonga behind him, and he gives him the look. So much there, so much story being built, and it's going to be amazing. And you could hear the crowd in the background that's watching in the arena chanting, "We want Roman, we want Roman." As soon as Roman lost the title, he became a babyface. He was so over already, even as the heel. But man, this is going to be huge. When you hear that, when that music hits the first time, when he comes back, holy crap. It's going to blow everyone's minds, and WWE will have a babyface Roman Reigns that they've always wanted, that the crowd wants. Not that they are forcing on the crowd, but the crowd wants him. They want to cheer Roman Reigns. And I hope that it's the same Roman Reigns. Like, I don't want to see, like, smiling, you know, like, making amends in a sense, but in a Roman Reigns manner. I think they've been really diligent in telling the story that Roman Reigns has been the one who's been loyal, which is really interesting because you've had everyone turning on Roman Reigns. He's been manipulative. He's made the people act out against him because of how terrible he's been to them, but it's never been him that has thrown people aside. That's really interesting because you don't have to really tweak his character that much. He can be the same guy. He can make amends, but he can also say, I've always loved you. I've always been loyal to you. I might not have acted the way I should have, but it wasn't coming from any place but a place of love. And that's a really interesting story you can tell there, because you have all these people like, who loves somebody that way? Who manipulates them? Who treats them that way? And then that's where the tension lies. But in Roman Reigns' mind, he's always been acting in his family's best interests. He just had to do things in a way that were less than admirable. So, oh man, it's going to be so good when he finally comes back. WWE is doing a good job of teasing and keeping it interesting, even in his absence. And also keeping Cody Rhodes away from the Bloodline, I think, is key. And but they're both on SmackDown, which is interesting. They've been able to successfully keep them apart. So we'll see what happens there. So I didn't talk about the most important development on SmackDown, which was the announcement by Nick Aldis about who Cody Rhodes' next challenger is going to be. And there were some mixed reactions to this. Now, I personally think it's a great move, because if we're keeping Cody Rhodes protected until The Rock and Roman Reigns come back, then who better than Logan Paul to be a feud. He's great at telling stories already in his young wrestling career. I think having Logan Paul is a great move on their part. Now, everybody's going to talk about, like, we cannot strap up Cody with the U.S. title as well. I don't think that's the end game. I think either if they have a contract signing, they'll find it in the fine print that it's only for the Undisputed WWE Championship. Either that or we're not getting a finish. Which I feel like that is more likely. We're not going to get a true finish because of all the teases of the Uncle Howdy faction. I haven't done the deep dive, but I've listened to many people who have, and there's been clues about 525, which is the date of King and Queen of the Ring. We've seen something about, like, I think at the time it was 19 days, which was on May 6th, and that was then 19 days from King of the Ring. So I think it would be really interesting to see this because a lot of the clues have been talking about how, like, you never saw anything in us and you forgot about us and all that kind of stuff. So what better way for them to debut than to interrupt the match between the two hand-picked top guys of WWE? You have Logan Paul, he's got the sponsorships and he's getting all this TV time and he's not, you know, from the business, as it were. So there's that storyline. And then you have Cody Rhodes, who is the face of the company. And he could then, you know, it'd be really interesting. Either I think Logan Paul loses by DQ, or we don't even get a finish to the match. Maybe at some point we have both of them be knocked out, and then the lights go out, and we see the Uncle Howdy faction debut at King and Queen of the Ring. We'll see. But there's a lot I could get into with that. I think that is the play. I would be surprised if they have Cody win the title. I feel like that doesn't do anything other than maybe they have him get the U.S. title because he's the American Nightmare, and then that they combine the titles and do the Winged Eagle. He brings back the Winged Eagle. That would be fantastic because we have gotten new belts. The only belt that hasn't really changed, and it did get changed when they got rid of the two belts for Roman, but they kept that look, and I feel like that is the last piece, the last domino to fall. That's the only caveat I have with this whole thing, is that maybe they're going to reintroduce one of the older titles, like the European title or something like that, which I think that's dumb. I think the U.S. title is good, a good title, and I think it should stay, but I could see them molding the U.S. title and having it be the Winged Eagle. That's the only thing that I would say. There's probably like a 5% chance of that. The bigger, I think, like a 90% chance that that it ends up either in a schmoz finish with the debuting of the faction, the Wyatt family faction, or a DQ, which I feel like they wouldn't end the match with a DQ. But I will say this. What I would love to see, if LA Knight ends up losing in that side of the bracket, which I feel like he won, so he advances, and I forget who he wrestles. I think he wrestles Tama Tonga, and then Randy Orton wrestles Carmelo Hayes, if I'm not mistaken, on this week's SmackDown. Which, yeah, I don't know where that goes. I'd love to see Randy Orton, Tama Tonga. Obviously, they've teased that, but if that happens, I don't know. I feel like what I see is LA Knight losing. If LA Knight somehow gets there, right, and it's LA Knight versus Gunther, Gunther wins. We have Logan Paul beating down Cody with brass knucks by DQ, doing some heelish stuff. Maybe he has I Show Speed there or some other celebrities, and they're putting the boots on Cody Rhodes. And then you hear LA Knight's music hit to defend Cody Rhodes. I love this. This is what I want to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but that sets up so many things. One, it sets up Cody to be protected by LA Knight, somebody who's recently mentioned wanting to have story with, because the only person I would argue is as over as Cody Rhodes is LA Knight right now in terms of fan response. And you want to see those two dynamic promos and personalities in the ring together. I would love to see, because you could then start to have tag matches built up where you have LA Knight and Cody on the same side. But then it also sets up LA Knight, Logan Paul for SummerSlam, which is the match I want. I want LA Knight to beat Logan Paul for the U.S. title. It's got to happen. But all that to say, I wouldn't be surprised if the faction debuts, but that's where we're heading. But we have some matches coming up that are really exciting to see as well. So anyway, that's where I see it going. I think we will get the debut of the Wyatt Family faction. But who knows? It could go in a lot of different directions, which is why this is so much fun. So Monday Night Raw. I can't believe I'm like 20 minutes into this podcast. 25 minutes. I haven't even talked about Monday Night Raw. Drew McIntyre kicked off Raw and ran down the people he's been having beef with. And he mentioned Damian Priest. Damian Priest came out. And I thought he did a good job holding his own with Drew McIntyre. He was kind of in the tweener role, although I do want to see this match at Clash at the Castle, and I want the situational babyface to be Drew McIntyre. My concern is that they are going to have McIntyre lose at Clash of the Castle. The reason I say that is because it's too perfect for him to win at Clash of the Castle. And I think that this aggrieved role of McIntyre, it's the way you further that story. And I hate that. I hate that because everyone is saying, oh, well, Drew's going to win the title at Clash of the Castle, which scares me. You know, it's kind of like in my football fandom, whenever I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, whenever everybody on the board before the pre-show or the pregame picks the Eagles to win, I'm like, oh, crap. You know, I feel like that's what ends up jinxing them. When everyone assumes they're going to win is when they usually blow it. That's what I feel like with this, and I'm concerned. But I would love for Drew McIntyre to win the title because I would love for the CM Punk Drew McIntyre feud to have the title involved because that's where it all started. It obviously was going on and on because the whole thing was about him getting the title match, the WrestleMania main event, and Drew McIntyre stole it from him by injuring him. And then you have Drew McIntyre losing the title at WrestleMania because of CM Punk after he won it. I feel like we need the title in that match. That not because the match isn't big enough, but because it's a part of the story. Not all feuds require a title, but I think the title is a part of this story, and I think that's important. So I would love to see, so I'm glad to see they're going in this direction, that we're most likely going to get Damian Priest versus Drew McIntyre at Clash at the Castle, and I need Drew McIntyre to win that match, as much as I think I might be setting myself up for disappointment. So we had some great matches. Io Sky, Shayna Baszler. Io Sky won. Let me see if I'm missing anything in the recaps here. No, I'm just going to fly through this. I don't know how much. Kofi Kingston versus Gunther. What a great match this was. There's a couple near falls where I was like, wow, are they actually going to have Gunther lose because everyone's predicting him to be the King of the Ring? I don't know, but a good match here. The biggest thing that I think is happening is we have this continued build with Chad Gable and the Alpha Academy, the storyline with Bronson Reed and Sami Zayn. Chad Gable as a heel is fantastic, and I think they're really doing their best to position him. I think that I want to see that the moment that the Alpha Academy splits off from Chad Gable, they'll all be over, and Chad Gable will have to find new people. He did express interest in training Ivy Nile, which is interesting. See, we get the slow burn with the Creed brothers and the Ivy Nile faction. I like that. They're taking their time. They're not forcing it, and we're having justified motivations, which is a good thing. Bronson Reed squashed Akira Tozawa, and we got more storyline. Well, that's what's interesting about this. I mean, Chad Gable was on this show throughout because you had not only a Bronson Reed Akira Tozawa match where Chad Gable was there, but you had the Sami Zayn Otis match where Chad Gable was there, and you had the backstage stuff. So, like, they're really building this Chad Gable thing. They're putting it a lot of screen time, which is good. That shows that they're invested in it. So Bronson Reed squashed Tozawa. You have that. You had some stuff backstage, which we're not going to get into very much. Lyra Valkyria, Zoe Stark. Lyra Valkyria went over. Let me see here. We had a Fatal 4-Way match announced for the number one contenders of the World Tag Team titles. New Catch Republic, Authors of Pain, Finn Balor, and Dominic Mysterio. Not Dominic Mysterio. That's a typo. JD McDonagh and the Creed Brothers, which that match happened later on. Sami Zayn versus Otis. You had Otis trying to please Chad Gable. And what's interesting is that Chad Gable slapped him and humiliated him, and Otis just went to the back. sheepishly as like the, you know, the pupil of the master who had disappointed him, as opposed to seeing Otis turn and fight back against it, which leads me to believe that at some point we will get that, and we will get Otis versus Chad Gable as part of the storyline, which is really cool because I feel like they've just been comedic relief, but I would love to see a revitalized Otis with a fire and a passion to do what's right. And it could be really good storytelling, especially if Chad Gable finds a way to win the title and then you have Otis coming after him for the title. It gives more opportunities to people who deserved it and who've really kind of been there through thick and thin. Becky Lynch versus Dakota Kai. Lynch defeated Kai via disqualification because there was interference from Damage Control, which is good. This is what you want from a heel faction, is you want them messing things up and keeping things. And then we had Lyra Valkyria and a fellow Irish lass coming to the aid of Becky Lynch. They have history with the NXT. Valkyria was the one who beat Becky Lynch for the NXT championship. But then you couldn't celebrate for too long because Liv Morgan got involved and took out Becky Lynch. And we have Liv Morgan. There's a lot of stuff going on with Dominic and Liv, which they're teasing, and I love it. I wouldn't be surprised if Dominic interferes at King and Queen of the Ring on behalf of Liv to allow her to win the title from Becky Lynch, and that establishes them as a pairing now. That might be too soon. That might be rushed. They might be saving that, which is fine. But I do see there's been teases, obviously, with them both coming out of the same dressing room, one after the other. Then there was one of the great polls from people who scour Reddit and the internet where Dominic had the bandana, and then the next time you saw him, he didn't have the bandana. And then Liv, backstage, had the bandana in her pocket. This is good storytelling. They're good Easter eggs that they're doing here. I love it. Then we had the tag team contenders match, and the Judgment Day won, which is kind of interesting because they were the ones who held the title for a long time. It's a different pairing, obviously. It's not Damian Priest and Finn Balor. It's JD McDonagh and Finn Balor. But we'll see where they go with this. It'd be really interesting to see if they put the titles back on them. I feel like that's weird, but maybe they're doing that. Maybe they want to have the swerve of, no, the Judgment Day is strong as ever, you know? And we have Carlito trying to get into the Judgment Day, which is really interesting. This is really cool. I love to see Carlito in this role. I feel like he did nothing while he was a babyface. He was kind of boring and bland, but seeing him as this, you know, kind of smarmy heel, much better. What I can see happening is having Carlito and Dom pair up, JD and Finn pair up, Damian Priest on his own. I would love to see that. We could have, because you have the whole storyline with Carlito and Dominic and the connection to Rey. You could have Rey and Dragon Lee or Rey and Andrade, however you want to do it. But ultimately, Dominic's hurt, so that might take some time. But I do love seeing Carlito as a heel. I think this works really well, and having him kind of tease around with the Judgment Day is a good story to give everybody something to do. Finally, we had Jey Uso versus Ilya Dragunov. Great match. Dragunov is really impressive to watch. I can now see why everybody talks about him. Jey Uso won, so the semifinals is now a rematch of Gunther versus Jey Uso. It'd be interesting to see if the Bloodline gets involved. Last time they had a match, Jimmy Uso interfered, and it appeared as though Jey Uso was supposed to win. Some people said that there was talk of him actually winning the Intercontinental title. I don't know about that, but it would be interesting, because if somehow Jey Uso beats Gunther, then that upsets the whole SmackDown bracket, in my opinion. Because it would change all my predictions for that bracket. But we'll see. I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that Jay's going to lose, although he keeps taking a lot of losses in high-profile spots, which we'll see if people can recover from that. But all that to say, I'm going to end here. Great build to this King and Queen of the Ring. As I said, this is the renaissance of tournament wrestling. Making wrestlers fight for things with purpose and storytelling is why we love wrestling. It's why we get into the product. And I'm really appreciative of the fact that WWE as a brand is getting that and is giving the fans what they want, which is a reason to invest week to week. And that's why this is good. That's why I'm enjoying it. And that's why I will be back next week with more developments leading us into King and Queen of the Ring. Until then, get out there and enjoy all the wrestling.